I went to watch the Oscars last night, so I stayed up way too late. So let us, we've been reading the Bhagavad Gita, which just seemed like a very good text for this time. So we're up to the part where he's talking about what in this translation is translated as firm wisdom, but I've always called it steady wisdom. The Sanskrit is sthita prajna, steady wisdom. I like that more. It's a bit more poetic, I think, than firm wisdom. So the last thing that Krishna has said is, indifferent to scriptures, your mind stands by itself, unmoving, absorbed in deep meditation. This is the essence of yoga. And I mean, at the risk of being really literal and a little bit silly, we can read that indifferent to the news. It doesn't just have to be scriptures. Indifferent to every distraction, every belief system, every complexity that's always coming at us. Indifferent to that, your mind stands by itself, unmoving, absorbed in deep meditation. You know, indifferent to the pull of, indifferent to the pull and the stress of our worldly responsibilities. Doesn't mean we don't do them, but indifferent to the stress that is the pressure. It's all the same. Indifferent to that, your mind stands by itself, unmoving, absorbed in deep meditation. This is the essence of yoga. In other words, when we move through life completely connected to that deep core of aliveness, that's the state of yoga. So then Arjuna says, how would you describe the man, in our case, or woman, whose wisdom is steadfast, Krishna? How does the wise one speak? How does he sit, stand, walk? And this is now when Krishna's really going to start giving it to him. So he says, and remember, this text is very much couched in a, you know, an androcentric, male-centric language, but we know we're talking about all people. When a man gives up all desires that emerge from the mind and rests contented in the self, by the self, he is called a man of firm, or what we would say, steady wisdom. When a man gives up all desires that emerge from the mind and rests contented in the self, by the self, he is called a man of firm wisdom. That's sthita prajna. He whose mind is untroubled by any misfortune, whose craving for pleasures has disappeared, who is free from greed, fear, anger, who is unattached to all things, who neither grieves nor rejoices if good or bad things happen, that man is a man of firm wisdom. You know, and I think especially now, it's so important to really imbibe this teaching. Otherwise, we can be so whipped around by, you know, the 24-hour news cycle, and what has Trump done today, and how are we going to deal with this, and what's going to... And it's like, once the mind takes over and does its worrying, strategizing thing, we get pulled out of ourselves, and we get pulled out of that deep core anchoring. We're going to have to function anyway. We're going to have to do everything that we have to do, but we want to do it from power inside of ourselves and not from the minds. How does he say? The mind that's troubled. Desires that emerge from the mind, and those desires can be to change the world, but when they're emerging from the mind and they're not deeply infused with the power of being, they're going to burn us out. It's just how it works. The mind is a master at burning us out. He whose mind is untroubled by any misfortune, whose craving for pleasures has disappeared. And again, it's the craving. Pleasure is great. It's the craving that is the problem. Who is free from greed, fear, anger. who is unattached to all things. Doesn't mean we can't have things and delight in things and enjoy things, but we don't want to be attached to them so that when they go away, we feel bad. Who neither grieves nor rejoices if good or if bad things happen. There's a somewhere, I'm not sure if it's in this text or somewhere else, it's like, no praise, no gain. That's the state of yoga. It simply is. Neither grieves nor rejoices if good or bad things happen. That man is a man of firm wisdom. Having drawn back all his senses from the objects of sense, as a tortoise draws back into its shell, that man is a man of firm wisdom, steady wisdom. And that's what we have to do in order to meditate. Right? We have to draw awareness in, pull it back in from the senses. We've done this for so many years, and turn those senses within so we're not being pulled by the incredible amazingness of the world. We can enjoy it, but we can't be attached to having it. Sense objects fade for the abstinent, yet the craving for them continues. But even the craving vanishes for someone who has seen the truth. Sense objects fade for the abstinent, yet the craving for them continues. But even the craving vanishes for someone who has seen the truth. He's making a very profound statement there. It's the craving that needs to be addressed. That's why behavior modification often doesn't work. It works for a while. If the deeper craving that was underneath, that was like the motivating, the unconscious motivating force of the behavior, if that deep craving, that reaching outside of ourselves for completion, if that's not attended to, we're just caught in the old, the good old play of opposites, right? At first, although he continually tries to subdue them, the turbulent senses tear at his mind and violently carry it away. And this is, you know, this is, we all know that. The turbulent senses tear at his mind and violently carry it away. And we all know the state, you know, when we're stressed out about something. We're under the influence of our turbulent senses that are in a state of overwhelm. Seeing too much, hearing too much, feeling too much, tasting too much, touching too much, you know. And then there is that sense, you know, when we go into uber stressed out overwhelm, there is that sense of being torn apart. And we become all dissociated. And we get violently carried away. Lose that core anchoring. Restraining the senses, discipline. Now he's giving a teaching, he's giving a practice. He should focus his whole mind on me. And me is Krishna, and Krishna is an external embodiment of the pure, deep self. Restraining the senses, disciplined, he should focus his whole mind on me. When the senses are in control, that man is a man of firm wisdom. If a man keeps dwelling on sense objects, attachment to them arises. From attachment, desires flare up. From desire, anger is born. From anger, confusion follows. From confusion, weakness of memory. Weak memory, weak understanding. Weak understanding, ruin. This is the secret of life. If a man keeps dwelling on sense objects, attachment to them arises. From attachment, desire flares up. From desire, anger is born. From anger, confusion follows. From confusion, weakness of memory. Weak memory, weak understanding. Weak understanding, ruin. But the man who is self-controlled, who meets the objects of the senses with neither craving nor aversion, will attain serenity at last. In serenity, all his sorrows disappear at once, forever. When his heart has become serene, his understanding is steadfast. So we'll leave the Bhagavad Gita and let's give it from the perspective of Kabir. So Kabir says, same teaching. I said to the wanting creature inside me, right? That's craving. What is this river you want to cross? There are no travelers on the river road and no road. Do you see anyone moving about on that bank or resting? There is no river at all and no boat and no boatman. There is no tow rope either and no one to pull it. There is no ground, no sky, no time, no bank, no ford. And there is no body and no mind. It's very Vedantic. It's not this. The notion that all material, physical reality is an illusion. And although one can unpack that and question it, when you understand it from this perspective, it's true. It is an illusion. Because everything is always changing. Everything that's alive goes through one morphing transformation after another. And so it's true. Nothing really exists as we think it is, because even as we're perceiving it, it's changing. Do you believe that there is some place that will make the soul less thirsty? This is what he's saying. Do you believe there's some place outside of you that's going to fill you up? It's never going to happen. Do you believe there is some place that will make the soul less thirsty? And then he says, in that great absence, you will find nothing. In that great absence, you will find nothing. Be strong then and enter into your own body. There you have a solid place for your feet. Think about it carefully. Don't go off somewhere else. Kabir says this, just throw away all thoughts of imaginary things and stand firm in that which you are. It's very, very, very profound. Kabir says this, just throw away all thoughts of imaginary things and stand firm in that which you are. Lose the story, especially the story that keeps you down. Friend, please tell me what I can do about this world I hold to and keep spinning out. I gave up sewn clothes and wore a rope, but I noticed one day the cloth was well woven. See, that's sense pleasure, right? That's attachment. We'll just keep going. So I bought some burlap, but I still throw it elegantly over my shoulder. I pulled back my sexual longings, and now I discover that I'm angry a lot. I gave up rage, and now I notice that I'm greedy all day. I worked hard at dissolving the greed, and now I am proud of myself. When the mind wants to break its link with the world, it still holds on to one thing. Kabir says, listen, my friend, there are very few that find the path. He's like in this, he's sort of wrestling with the teaching Krishna is giving in the Bhagavad Gita. And then Mary Oliver just takes the whole thing and makes it just for us. So this one is called 5 a.m. in the Pine Woods. 5 a.m. in the Pine Woods. This poem is so about being present in our complete aliveness and delighting in the wonder of the world and being utterly and absolutely content with just being a part of that and not needing to cling to it. Not needing to possess it, simply being part of it, part of this this web of creation. 5 a.m. in the pine woods. I'd seen their hoofprints in the deep needles and knew they ended the long night under the pines, walking like two mute and beautiful women towards the deeper woods. So I got up in the dark and went there. They came slowly down the hill and looked at me sitting under the blue trees. Shyly, they stepped and stared from under their thick lashes and even nibbled some damp tassels of weeds. This is not a poem about a dream, though it could be. This is a poem about the world that is ours, or could be. Finally, one of them, I swear it, would have come to my arms, but the other stamped sharp hoof in the pine needles like the tap of sanity, and they went off together through the trees. When I woke, I was alone. I was thinking, so this is how you swim inward. So this is how you float outward. So this is how you pray.